Welcome to the Comic Book Rundown.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Comic Book Rundown. I'm your host, Joe, and for this episode, I'm going to be talking about Boosted Gold and Superman. So, don't need the banter, because it's just myself. So let's just go ahead and jump right into it. These books were put out by DC in 1986 and 1987. And we're going to be covering Booster Gold issues 13 through 23. Action Comics numbers 594 and 595, and annual number 1, Superman, issue 12, and annual number 1, and The Adventures of Superman, annual number 1. The writers, and I just put all the writers in one big jumble here, the writers are Dan Jurgens, John Byrne, and Jim Starlin. The art is done by Dan Jurgens, Art Adams, Ron Frenz, F-R-E-N-Z, Frenz, Steve Montano, there we go, and John Byrne. Inks by Gary Martin, Mike DiCarlo, Bruce Patterson, Bob Lewis, Arnie Starr, V-E-Y, Ty Templeton, Dick Giordano, Brett Breeding, John Byrne, Keith Williams, Roy Richardson, and Carl Kessel. Letters by Bob Lappin, John Costanza, August Moss, Albert DuGuzman, Duncan Andrews, and Steve Haney. And colors by Gene D'Angelo, Bob Lewis, Peter Scotusi, S-C-O-T-E-S-E, Scotusi, and Tom Zuko, Z-I-U-K-O. I think that's right. I could be wrong, but I'm probably right. But anyway, so let's go ahead and get into it. So I don't normally do this, but I want to talk quickly about some supporting characters for these Booster Gold issues. First up is Dirk Davis. Dirk is essentially Booster's agent and runs a lot of the day-to-day operations at Booster's company, Gold Star Incorporated. Next is Trixie Collins. She is the receptionist at Gold Star and seems to have a will-they-won't-they thing going on with Booster. But they may be all in it, but that may all be in his head. And lastly is Jack Sue. He is the Vice President of Research and Development over at Star Labs and has been working with Booster lately on many projects. After Booster's latest battle, Jack has been tasked with repairing Booster's suit and rebuilding Skeets. Unfortunately, since all the electrical components are from the future, he is only able to get so far. We'll pick up at the moment where Trixie tells Jack and Dirk that Booster is from the future. After hearing this, Jack has a theory about Booster's current state of his powers. Over the last few issues, Booster's powers have been weakening, and no one had any idea why. Jack's theory is that Booster's immune system is completely different than everyone else's because he is from the future, and if they are going to get him back to the future for him to get better, Jack knows of one guy to go to when it comes to time travel. We pop over to Booster, who is laid up in a hospital, recovering from his latest battle. But this is happening during Legends, and the exact time that G. Gordon Godfrey is touting all of his anti-hero rhetoric. So there are a bunch of people outside of the hospital. Eventually, they make their way into the hospital to get to Booster, and it's right at that moment when Trixie, Dirk, and Jack show up and see them getting into the hospital. they know that they need to help Booster out, but the cops won't get there in time. So Jack pulls a costume out of the back of his car that he had put together for Booster as a female sidekick for advertising purposes. Trixie is against the idea at first, but knows that Booster is in trouble if she doesn't do anything. She dons the costume, allowing her to fly up to Booster's room because the suit attracts and repels metallic objects. She grabs Booster and they go flying out of the room, only stopping off on an adjacent roof long enough for Booster to get suited up and then go to meet up with Dirk and Jack at Booster's plane in his private hangar. The group then have to make a quick getaway from the security at the airfield, and after they do, Booster tells them all about his past and how he came to be in Metropolis. The long and short of it all is Michael Carter was an all-star college football player from the year 2462 until he started to bet on games that he played in. When he was found out, he lost everything. His mother and sister were devastated by the news, thinking that he was turning into his father, who was a compulsive gambler that left their family when Booster was around 4 years old. Eventually, he got a job at the Space Museum in Metropolis as a night watchman with Skeets as his security robot partner. One night, he found a time machine in the museum and decided to steal it, along with some other equipment to make a new life in the past. Not the most poetic hero origin, but what are you going to do? Anyway, the group makes it to their destination, which turns out to be the home of Rip Hunter, an old classmate of Jack's. Rip is the foremost expert on time travel theory, and after he shows the group his time sphere, Booster informs him that his theories have merit, because he is pretty sure that Rip's time sphere is the same time machine he stole in the future. After some preparations, everyone but Dirk hops into the sphere and heads to Gotham City in the 25th century. Things go south really quick when they get to the future, though. The time sphere locked up and lost power, forcing Rip and Jack to stay back and look into that problem as Booster and Trixie head over to his mom's apartment. Unfortunately, when he gets there, he finds out that she passed away shortly after Booster disappeared, and then the landlord kicked out his sister when she couldn't pay the rent. Hell of a welcome home party, if you ask me. So Booster and Trixie leave the apartment building after Booster threatened to beat up the landlord, and one of the tenants called the cops. And because Booster stole a time machine the last time he was here, he's already a wanted man. They make their way back to the time sphere, only to be attacked by the local police. And in the exchange, the time sphere gets destroyed. The two make their escape again, but are surrounded when they stop to take a breather. As that fight went on, one of their attackers fell into the water and Trixie used her powers to save him, but in doing so caused both her and Booster to be captured. At the police station, the feds showed up because the moment Booster stole the time machine, it became a federal crime. And because of that, Booster is set to be executed. While all this is happening, Jack and Rip had left the time sphere because they found that one of the components had been burnt out when they were trying to fix it. So they weren't there when the sphere got destroyed. They came back to the wreckage and quickly realized that they were screwed. They ended up hiding at a local motel, and Jack was able to strip an entertainment center to help power up Skeets, and in the process, find out that Booster got captured and will be executed the following day. As the two of them try to access anything on the local web about time travel, they get a knock at the door. The cops have shown up because they tried to access those files, and they gave Jack a shakedown. Rip pops out of a hidden spot and takes the two cops down, and then the two of them decide to play dress-up with the cops' uniforms. They figure the best way to find a new time machine and to break Booster and Trixie out of prison is to fake it until you make it, and it actually works. They are able to get into a Star Labs building, finish the repairs on Skeets, and figure out everything they needed to save their friends and to get back to the past. As for Booster and Trixie, well, that pesky virus that was killing him was easily taken care of by the doctors, so he is no longer dying, but he is still scheduled to be executed, so there's that. Speaking of, the next morning, they are being transported for his execution, and Jack and Rip infiltrate the cops guarding them to set them loose. As fighting breaks out, the group gets surrounded and then get rescued by Booster's sister Michelle, when she flies in with a school bus, giving them time to escape. They are all able to make it to Metropolis, allowing Rip and Jack to rig up a device that will take them back to 1986. Booster tries to tell Michelle where he has been, but she already knows, and she tells him that their mother knew too, and was very proud of him fulfilling his destiny. Booster goes off on Skeets for not informing him about being a part of history, but Skeets just reminded him that he was always just trying to make sure that history stayed on course, and that Booster was a part of that history. Just then, Broderick, the cop that has been chasing after Booster, shows up, along with the one guy that fell in the water that Trixie saved last issue. As the goon is fighting Booster, Trixie pleads with Broderick that Booster needs to be in the past. She shows him a historical document from 1987 with Booster in it as proof. Broderick doesn't buy it and attempts to attack her, but the goon jumps in and pummels him. It was a thank you for rescuing him from before. Unfortunately, in all of the excitement, Broderick's gun went off and shot one of the cables that was kind of important to the whole time travel attempt. But worry not. The goon ends up holding the wires together as everyone gets on the platform, Michelle included, and ports back to 1986. They make it back to the past, but a few months have gone by and it is 1987 now. While everyone was off in the future having fun future adventures, Dirk was left in the past with his own tasks to do. First up was to find a new base of operations for Gold Star Incorporated, since the old one was destroyed in the last battle. He was able to acquire a huge mansion in downtown Metropolis and was then able to get it equipped with the necessary upgrades in case any villain tried attacking again. With those tasks complete, he then had to sit and wait for the team to return home, which took about 4 months. Now he's able to hand the keys over to Booster, and Booster, in turn, gives a tour to the rest of the team. Talks about changing the brand name from Gold Star Inc. to Booster Gold International, giving everyone jobs with the company, and inviting them to stay in the mansion if they want. Other things of note in this issue were Jack suggesting that Booster not use his force field unless he's in battle, lest he have a repeat of getting extremely sick again, Michelle wanting to explore this time period on her own, Dirk and his daughter, Sarah, guilting Trixie into going out to dinner with them. Also, there's one panel of Sarah that makes her look like a Muppet. When you see their whole body on screen, it's kind of shrunken and doesn't look right. It's really weird. And Maxwell Lord sneaking into Booster's headquarters to offer him a seat at the Justice League table. That's for Booster stuff. Lastly, we have a few pages of the assassin for hire, Cheshire, on the job. When she gets a call for another job, that just can't wait. She is to acquire an alleged deadly formula in America. At that same moment, in the said lab, Hawk is in here talking with the doctor that has invented the formula. He hasn't finished it yet, but it will be ready soon and it will change the world. And Hawk is all for releasing it out there. He has really gone psycho after losing Dove. Now on American soil, Cheshire sneaks into the lab, but finds the doc missing and the formula with him. So she kills a few guards on the way out in frustration. The next morning, Booster comes to investigate the break-in, since he is now the owner of this certain lab, and finds out it was Cheshire that broke in and that the doc, one Pete Babich, has been working on a side project in his free time. Booster and Skeets head over to Babich's home and talk with his wife and find out that he is in Mexico with Hank Hall and that he has been acting strange the past few weeks. Once in Mexico City, Booster and Skeets locate the police station in hopes that they can help search for Babich. As for Babich, him and Hawk are on their way out of town to the place that he has designated will be a good location to release the virus. It turns out that the police are no real help to Booster, but Jack, all the way in Metropolis, was. He was searching Babich's lab and found a computer disk taped under his desk that detailed his plans to eradicate the majority of the human race that he has deemed undesirable with a deadly bacteria that he created. That is the formula that Cheshire is hired to steal. So with this new information, Booster is able to make it out to the middle of the desert just in time to save Hawk after Cheshire attacks him and takes the bacteria from him before he was able to release it into the atmosphere. And for those who don't know anything about Cheshire, know this. She also has a way with poisons, venoms, and toxins. I say that because she has poisons in her claws and scratches Hawk, infecting him. Anyway, after Booster saved Hawk from going splat on the ground, he goes after Cheshire and shoots down the helicopter that she is trying to get away in. He saves her and the pilot, but the bacteria was still on the helicopter when it crashed, and it was released into the air, killing Babich because he was too close in proximity. With some quick thinking from Skeets, Booster was able to use his force field to capture the bacteria. He then threatens Cheshire into giving Hawk the antidote to her toxins. And then the pilot tries to bargain with Booster that the Russian government will give him a ton of money if he turns the bacteria over to him. Booster basically gives this guy the middle finger as he shrinks the force field down and destroys the only sample of the bacteria anyway. Or anywhere. He then punches the pilot and flies off, leaving everyone in the desert to fend for themselves. The only other thing that happened in this issue is Dirk and Trixie go out on a date. I guess I forgot to mention that the entire time Hawk was thinking that the virus was going to be targeting certain people. Like, certain... not underprivileged, but like... sick individuals, because that's what the doctor told him. But the doctor was literally just gonna be killing everybody that wasn't American, because the doctor was a piece of shit. So all right, so on to the next issue, which is all about Broderick, who, if you remember, was the cop that had a real hard on for capturing Booster in the future. Turns out, right after Booster and company left the future for the past, Broderick followed, but ended up appearing a few months later. So he has spent the last few months fuming and making his way to Metropolis to finally take Booster out for good. What it ends up being is Broderick seeing that Booster is actually a hero, and he lets Booster walk. I'll be honest, though, I can't remember if Broderick is able to get back to his own time, or if he is stuck in this time period. He doesn't show up in any issue after this, but there's also issue 24 and 25, the last two issues of the series, so it's possible he could show up there. So I don't know. As we move into the next two issues, we come to realize that Booster doesn't really have his own rogues gallery, so the writers will pull in characters from other titles. For example, Rainbow Raider shows up to ruin an art showing put on by Paul Morris, an old colleague of his, because Morris was stealing his work from over the years and passing it off as his own. Booster tries to stop him, but because he is out of costume, he doesn't really stand a chance against him, and the Raider was able to get away with a stack of artwork. The next morning, it gets really embarrassing for Booster when Lois Lane writes up an article in the Daily Planet about how bad of a job Booster did at stopping the Rainbow Raider. And it gets worse for Booster when Morris sends over a representative to hire him to retrieve the paintings because they thought that money would buy his loyalty. Booster turns him down, not because he doesn't want the money, but because he doesn't want people to think that he is a hero for hire. He's still going to track down the Raider to retrieve the paintings, but not because someone is paying him to do it. Thanks to Skeets, they are able to track his trail all the way to his apartment, only for the Raider to get the upper hand over him and drain all the color from Booster, suit and all, and causing him to go blind. With the help of Skeets, he is able to make it back home, and Jack is able to use his some fancy equipment to at least get his color back, but his eyesight is still gone. Then Dirk informs him that the representative from earlier held a press conference stating that Booster was going to get the paintings back for them, which is exactly what Booster was trying to avoid. Back at a art museum, the Rainbow Raider is having a standoff with the cops until Booster shows up. He has a tinted visor on, so no one will know that he is blind, and Skeets is giving him instructions on how to move and fight. The Raider quickly ducks into the museum, and Booster follows. And Skeets is able to figure out that Morris plagiarized his work from Raider. When Booster suggests to Raider that he and Morris work out all this plagiarism business in the courts, the Raider assumes that he won't get a fair shake because he is a criminal and Morris will walk away scot-free. The fighting continues and one of the Raider's beams ends up starting a fire. The two of them grab all of the artwork and hightail it out of the museum. And as Morris comes running up with the police in tow, the Raider calls him out on his plagiarism, going so far as to asking for a pigment test from his work and Morris's work. So I guess now the courts will be on his side. I really feel like they drug these issues out to fill space. But, I mean, who knows. Lastly, Booster ends up buying the company that the representative works for and then firing him. The other thing going on in these issues, we find Michelle driving across the country to see the world of 1987. She ends up stopping at an inn in a small town in Minnesota. It turns out she had grabbed the Gold Star suit, the suit that Trixie used to save Booster all those issues back, and she is flying around the sky above the inn. The feel of the air in her hair is exhilarating, but fleeting, as she is shot down by a couple of kids that she had seen playing in the inn earlier. Well, those kids quickly change their forms into a couple of alien beings. They then take Michelle back to the inn and pull out a device that transports her and one of them to their planet. Actually, I think it wasn't a planet, it was a ship, but whatever. For unknown reasons. The next issue, Booster has his sight back. Yay! Which is good because now he can see that his sister is missing. Boo. Him and Skeets end up flying off to the inn out in the small town of Minnesota, only to find a dead desk clerk and an alien being that shoots first and asks questions never, because he decides to turn his gun on himself when he realizes that it has no effect on Booster's force field, and he would rather die than answer any questions. Booster searches the body for any clues and finds a Minnesota Twins baseball game ticket stub. I've played a lot of D&D in my time, and I know that when you search a body after a battle, you're bound to find something important that will help you out in the future. But I have to call bullshit on this one. Finding a ticket stub on the body? Finding it in the room would make sense, but he just happened to find the stub in a pocket. This particular game must have been really, or must have really impressed him for this alien to keep the stub on his person. I don't know. Anyway, Booster gets to Minneapolis and uses a high-frequency signal to search for a dimensional gateway that the alien beings could have used. Skeets locks onto one, and when they fly off to it, wouldn't you know it, it leads right to the Metrodome. You know, the place the baseball ticket would have also led them to. So much filler in this issue. What's not filler is what the alien beings are doing to Michelle, which is draining the Gold Star suit of all its magnetic powers, which in turn is also draining her. They say that the Earth doesn't have the technology to conquer their dimension just yet, but they could. So they are going to conquer them first. Apparently they have been trying to do to conquer this planet, conquer Earth, for some time. But the Teen Titans have always stopped them. This was back in the 60s, so the OG Teen Titans. Booster busts through a wall and finds the portal, and him and Skeets rush through. They end up in the middle of some weird place, getting attacked by some funky-looking creatures. Booster does his best to fight them off, but he is outnumbered badly. He ends up overloading one of his wristbands, chucking it across the ground, across the grounds to draw the beasties away so that he could get away himself. Eventually, some of the aliens show up to try and take Booster out, but Booster wasn't having it. He takes them down easily and goes through the portal they came through. Now he is face to face with the leader of this race and demanding to be taken to Michelle. But the leader is like, LOL, trolley problem, noob. Save one person or save 38,000 people at a baseball game that about ready to be attacked by one of our giant agents that is about ready to materialize and destroy. Also in this issue, back at Booster Gold International, Dirk is mad that Booster hired a corporate manager to run the company instead of letting him do it. Trixie tries to calm him down by inviting him over to her place for dinner. Things come to a screeching halt when a new VP, Mackenzie Mack Garrison, shows up and tells them to stop canoodling and get back to work. So, faced with the decision that is not really a decision, Booster goes back to Earth to save the people in the stadium, while Skeets stays back to look for Michelle. We will stick with Skeets for the moment as he tracks Michelle down in the ship and is able to free her. But because she is so drained, she is unable to move at the moment. Eventually, the two of them go sneaking around the ship and come upon the leader and another alien talking about their plans to take out the Midwest and then the coastal cities. Back with Booster, he goes to attack the giant monster, but apparently, it's like fighting a giant walking lump of putty. His attacks are ineffective. Luckily, the Justice League shows up to assist. After some more fighting, Captain Atom was able to open up a hole in the monster's side. Booster flew in and then expanded his force field until the monster exploded. Booster then rushes off through the portal again to get to Michelle, which is a good thing because the aliens found her and Skeets sneaking around and was about ready to execute her. They then fly down the corridor to stop the invading army before they could be transported to Earth. Instead of taking them out one by one, Booster decides to destroy the globe above them, which seemed to be the power source of the alien ship. So much so that by destroying that globe, rendering the structure unstable. Booster grabs Michelle and flies back to the portal, but unfortunately, it was closed off to them. Michelle runs back to the controls to find the switch as Booster uses his force field to keep the portal safe from all the debris falling around them. Just as she hits the button, a piece of the ceiling falls and hits a power cable, causing an explosion at the control panel, engulfing Michelle in the blast and pushing Booster and Skeets through the portal. The issue ends with a funeral for Michelle, and Booster is in a very bad place at this moment. And it doesn't help that these last few pages technically take place after the beginning events of Action Comics 594, so I think this is as good as a time as any to pop over to those Superman issues. So up first is Action Comics Annual Number 1, where Superman and Batman go up against vampires. Batman is down in South Carolina, although the issue says something about the bayou, which I didn't know was in South Carolina, but here we are. Investigating a small town called Fayerville that has reported some mysterious deaths that have also appeared in Gotham. Thinking he is a vampire, he gets ambushed by the locals after he finds another body, forcing him to fight his way out, non-lethally. He ends up contacting Clark Kent at the Daily Planet in hopes that he can get a message to Superman. This is before the two knew the other's identity. As he finishes up his call, a young girl walks up to him and is ecstatic to see him. This is Skeeter. She was being chased by a group of people at the start of this issue, around the swamplands. She had managed to evade them, and when she made it back to her place, we saw her talking to the bodies of her parents. She takes Batman there now because she believes he is the one she has been waiting for that will help save them. Batman is taken aback by her decomposed the bodies are, and when he uses the holy name, that sends Skeeter into a flurry of emotions. Superman shows up in town and goes to see the sheriff, asking if Batman has contacted him. When that proves to be a dead end, the sheriff takes Superman over to the hospital to show him a bunch of people lying in hospital beds, maybe in comas with holes in their necks. Who's to say? They don't actually show it at this moment, so I'm just assuming. Anyway, now that Skeeter is right miffed, she lets her true color shine through and starts to put a whammy on Batman. He ends up jumping out of the house into some quicksand. Well, he says quicksand. I think it looks more like just swamp, but, you know, they said quicksand in the book, so. Either way, Skeeter looks on as he sinks, and then she calls out to all the people in the hospital beds. Because wouldn't you know it, Skeeter was the vampire all along. Superman chases after the people as they ransack the town, and he corrals them in a makeshift pen. Skeeter shows up, looking more feral, and because she is a mystical creature, she is able to harm Superman. And as she is about to bite his neck, Batman appears and puts a stake through her heart. Up next is Superman Annual Number 1, and for the most part, it's a simple story about not abusing monkeys. Dr. Thomas Moyers was using a monkey named Titano for lab experiments, or chimpanzee, monkeys, same difference. I mean, I know there is a difference. I don't want to get yelled at. I think this was chimp, so I just put monkey there. The rest of the time, I actually used the name Titano. So, Dr. Thomas Moyers was using a chimpanzee named Titano for lab experiments, and Titano had gotten loose in the labs. Lois was there interviewing Dr. Moyers when all of this was happening, and Titano ran to her as a means of comfort because he was scared. The lab assistants pulled Titano off of Lois, and then she gets thrown out of the lab by Amanda Waller. Superman is flying around, stopping a group of thieves robbing a bank with a tank. Because why not? After the cleanup is done, he ends up flying past a lab where the equipment is going berserk because of the damage the tank was doing to the power lines outside. This caused some feedback to the device Titano was hooked up to, and after Superman pulled him free of it, a fire broke out. Superman cleared the floor of the lab techs, but Titano went after Dr. Moyers, who was posted up in the room adjacent behind some shatterproof safety glass. The thing is, though, Titano seems to have gotten bigger and a mite bit stronger, because that shatterproof glass didn't stay shatterproof for long. Superman was able to save the Doctor from Titano's rampage for the moment, but then Titano turned his attention to Superman. The two of them went flying through the side of the building, down onto the street, where Titano started to grow larger still. With the fighting now out of the building, Waller informs Dr. Moyer that he needs to clean this up, and quickly, before the wrong people start asking questions. Eventually, Titano gets the upper hand against Superman, and after throwing a ton of rubble onto him, Titano walks away, growing as tall as a skyscraper. Superman gut checks Titano and then chucks him into the sky, flying out of the city and dropping him into the East River. He then grabs the main power grid cable off of the bridge and throws it into the water with Titano to try and stop him. How that doesn't outright kill him is anyone's guess. As Superman brings him back onto land, Lois drives up and is able to calm Titano down. The serenity doesn't last, as Dr. Moyers has a guy fire a fission ray at Titano, killing him. Dr. Moyers tries to claim the higher ground, stating that the rampage that the monster unleashed on the city warranted the actions. Lois punches him in the face, and he went down hard. The Adventures of Superman Annual Number 1 is next, and Superman is asked by the president to go investigate the town of Trudeau, South Dakota. Apparently, the town went silent 2 weeks back, and even the few people that have been sent into the town in the last 2 weeks haven't been heard from. Superman is able to figure out that there is some alien entity underground, so he lets himself be captured in the hopes that he'll find answers. Sadly, it was not the answers he was hoping for. The alien being captured all the town folk and then had their brains taken out and hooked up to a machine that he used to link them all together. As for their bodies, he lumped them into a giant mass of, well, the best way to describe it is a goop that moves? Anyway, Superman is pissed and attacks the alien. The goop stops him, giving the alien time to escape to his ship and back into space. Superman is able to destroy the goop, figuring that it was not really living, and then goes to talk with one of the brains that was left by the alien. When he hooked them up to the machine, he was able to give them telepathy, and now they want to die. Superman refuses to kill them, saying that there must be some way to save them all, even though their bodies were all gone. Not sure how far away from cloning they are in the comic books yet, but that could have been an option. But the brains use their telepathy and manipulate Superman into flipping the switch that would turn off their oxygen supply, killing them instantly. Of course, Superman isn't too happy with this victory. I mean, it's not really victory, so there we are. Now we bring Booster back into the picture in Action Comics number 594. But before we get there, we head over to Gotham City, where Superman is asking Batman's help in trying to figure out where a scrapbook of his exploits came from. I vaguely remember that in one of the Superman books we covered on the show some time ago, but I honestly can't remember which issue it appeared in. And when I try to go look it up, like look back in the books, plural, I couldn't find it. So I couldn't help give a reference. So I apologize for that. Batman also brought along Robin so that he would be able to meet Superman for the first time. He even goes so far as to sign a piece of edging material for Robin so he'll have something to remember the meeting. Back in Metropolis, Trixie is walking down the street as Booster flies overhead. She's surprised by this because, as far as she knew, he was off in another dimension fighting aliens. She was even more surprised when he ignored her calls to him and instead flew over to the statue of Superman the mayor had commissioned for Superman Day and then destroyed said statue. Booster then calls a press conference calling out Superman for invading Kurok, which happened in Adventures of Superman number 427, saying that it's high time that Superman answers for his crimes. Lois, who was forced to be there by Perry White, speaks up, saying that both the president and other high-ranking officials have backed Superman on his decision that day, but Booster isn't backing down. So much so that he barges into the mayor's office and kidnaps the mayor's daughter to use as bait to lure Superman out. Sure enough, this works, and when Superman shows up, the fight is on. Unfortunately for Superman, Booster seems to have had a major upgrade since the last time they sparred, back in the early issues of the Booster Girl title. Booster blasts Superman with a ray of some sort that disorients him, and then Booster doesn't let up, beating Superman into unconsciousness. And as the crowd looks on in bewilderment, Lois included, another Booster flies in wondering who the imposter is that just pulverized Superman. So because comics are the way they are, when we get into the next issue, that being Booster Gold number 23, the two Boosters are going at each other, and Superman isn't as unconscious as he was a minute ago. Eventually, Superman is able to figure out who the real Booster is, and the two of them go in for a frontal attack. However, every time Superman gets close to the imposter Booster, he's started feeling weak. He was able to deduce why just as the real Booster ripped off the arms of the fake, revealing it to be a robot. And after Booster gave it a power punch, the robot fell to pieces and a piece of kryptonite dropped to the ground. Robot with kryptonite in it. Who could be behind that? You don't have to wait very long for an answer, since Lex Luthor shows up literally on the next page, giving orders to his operative in the field that is relaying the video of everything back to him. The operative goes in for an attack, hitting Superman first, but doing less damage to Booster, which Lois takes note of right away. He then releases a drone that grabs the kryptonite out of Booster's hands and flies it back to Lex. Superman gets back on his feet and grabs the guy, flying him into the sky away from the prying eyes on the ground. And as Superman rips the armored costume off of this guy, we learn three things. First off, that armor does wonders for this guy's figure. In the armor, he looks like a musclehead, but as soon as Superman tore it all off, he almost looks like Melvin before he became the Toxic Avenger. Second, this guy works for Booster Gold International, and the armor is all made from BGI components. And lastly, Superman was supposed to tear the armor off in front of the reporters on the ground, leading to more speculation about Booster's grudge against Superman. But that went up in smoke when he flew into the air. The issue ends with Lex hosting a big gala on his yacht, and Booster showing up and stealing his date. One last thing of note that I was unable to mention in the last issue of Booster Gold, because there was no good place to say it with the way I wrote up my notes, but there was a few panels where someone in the shadows of Booster Gold International was accessing the computer files, mainly Booster's bank accounts. This will be important when we get to Millennium, the Millennium crossover. At least I think it will. I still haven't read that series, so I'm looking forward to it for the show. So we're going to move on to Superman issue number 12. And this one is a flashback issue. It's Superman remembering his time and first meeting with Lori Lamaris a year before he adopted his Superman identity. And because Clark has a thing for anyone with the initials LL, the two of them fell in love. But it wasn't meant to be. Mainly because Lori was a mermaid and needed to go find Atlantis. Years passed, and Superman met Aquaman and learned about the location of Atlantis. Clark was able to track down Lori through tales from some fishermen, but when she emerged, one of those fishermen threw a sword into her back. Superman was able to get her to Atlantis, and with some time, or overtime I should say, they were able to heal her, but she found love with someone else. Then she died defending Atlantis, I believe during Crisis on Infinite Earths. The issue ends with Jonathan and Martha Kent going over to Lana Lang's place to check on her. Apparently, she hasn't been answering her phone for the last 3 days. And then someone comes in and shoots them. I can only assume with some tranquilizers, and I can also assume this leads into Millennium as well. Our last issue is Action Comics number 595. The Silver Banshee rolls into Metropolis. In her wake, she leaves dead body after dead body by turning them into a husk of a human as she goes from bookstore to bookstore. Why bookstores, you ask? You find out at the end of the issue, but I'll reveal it now. She is in search of some books that are from the library of Castle Brion. Brion? Yeah, there we go. Brion. In Ireland. Sorry, I had to check how to say this in Irish, because, well, not Irish, but like pronounce it properly, and I knew I was going to say it wrong, so I did like a thing here, and anyway. The books were shipped to Metropolis and sent to multiple bookstores in the city. So by the time she gets to the next bookstore, Captain Maggie Sawyer and her police force are there ready to take her on. Unfortunately for them, she kills a few first, and they are unable to even leave a mark on her, which is quite impressive because she took a full gun blast to the gut and some other gunshots to the body. Silver Banshee kills one of the cops in full SWAT gear and then gets really confused when she sees another guy in the same gear. But when she goes to kill this one, it doesn't take. This is when Superman shows up, grabbing her wrist because he believes that her touch is what is killing these people. Turns out it was actually her voice, because she uses it on Superman, killing him. Word spreads around the globe. Lois is devastated. Justice League is shocked. And Lex is pissed. So it is now the funeral for Superman, which I can only assume was within the same day or two, because otherwise it makes no sense that the Silver Banshee hadn't gotten through all of the other bookstores in the city if it took a week to set up the funeral. Because she's still searching bookstores, we'll catch up with her in a second. First, we have to pop over to the funeral, because Superman's ghost can't rest in peace. He floats out of his casket and goes to pursue the Silver Banshee. She is ransacking another bookstore in search of one of those books. Jimmy is on the case in hopes to get the story for the Daily Planet. This is when Superman's ghost shows up, causing the Silver Banshee to be caught off guard. She uses her voice on Superman again to zero effect. So she ups the power of the whale, but it still does nothing to him. Jimmy, who is still in the background, is hearing the scream, but as we find out at the end, because it wasn't focused on him, it didn't harm him. Silver Banshee goes full power in hopes to take out Superman, but instead takes herself out. Like, she just disappears and gone, just gone. Then Superman shows up standing next to his ghost, and it's revealed that it was John Johns. He gives a convoluted answer about how he figured out that the Silver Banshee couldn't kill the same person twice, so that's why he was safe, because he was pretending to be Superman. and he was able to revive Superman when he phased through him at the funeral, or some bullshit like that. The issue ends with Lana being part of some clandestine group, vowing that Superman will join them or die. Again, this, I am certain, this is a lead-in for Millennium. I almost guarantee it's something for Millennium. But yeah, that's it. That's all I got for these issues. I enjoyed the Booster Gold ones. I know when I read them the first time, I actually went back and read the whole series. I went back to issue one and read the first 12, mainly because I wanted to see that first meeting, the first time Superman and Booster fought. And it wasn't even really a fight. But also, it was just 12 issues, so I'm like, I can do that. Why not? And that was actually kind of interesting. There was a couple of fights in there. There was a one bad guy in particular that was a kind of a 12 issue long bad guy. The 1000, I think, is what the group was called, that was kind of pestering Booster the entire time, leading up until that final battle, the one that destroyed his base, the headquarters, if you will, and that made Dirk have to go find a new base of operations. And that hurt Booster, so that's why we start out with him in the hospital in the very beginning. So, like, it was kind of interesting. I actually did enjoy the Booster Gold issues. Superman was on the other hand. Now, these were, I kind of stated that these were more filler issues. I mean, the crossover, and that's why I did these together, because we had the crossover issues of Booster and Superman. But, like, the Silver Banshee one, it's kind of a whatever issue. The Lori Loomis. I don't know why I said. Why did I totally spelled that wrong in my notes. Lamaris. Wow, I'm dumb. Anyway. Lori Loomis. That makes more. Why? It just popped in my head. Yeah, so, like, I remember that character. I remember that being a important person to Superman, but, like, it's a nothing issue here. It's literally just let's remember her. And I don't even know if that was a bigger thing in the past, or if this was we're going to create this character right here, and then we're going to kill her off. Like, I don't know. My whole assuming that she died in Crisis, that's me just assuming that. Like, I feel like I remember seeing her there, but I don't know, because it's not like they focused on Atlantis a lot. And the part that they did was more so on a different Earth. So, I don't know. At least I feel like it's been a minute since, one, we covered Crisis here, and two, since I've read Crisis. Actually, I think the last time I read Crisis was when we covered it on the show here, which was many years ago. So, yeah, no, these issues were fine for Superman. I've definitely read better ones. We've had better ones previously, and I know we're going to have better ones later on, but I also know for a lot of these comics, I want to get to better stories. Like, a lot of these are kind of, I'm sifting through a lot of crap issues. I know the next one is going to be some Marvel stuff, and those have been kind of rough. And I gotta get through them, so you guys don't have to read them. But I mean, Looking at my DC list, like, I've got a lot I still have to get through, because I'm trying to get all of the Millennium, all the stuff lined up to just lay out the Millennium books. So, like, all right, here we go. I've laid out the path. Now I can hit Millennium, and then from there I can lay out the next one into the next crossover, which I believe is Invasion. I'd have to double check on that one. But yeah, so it's for DC, it's basically event to event to event. I know Marvel, I'm basically just trying to work up to Secret Wars, which is 85. But the bad thing is I'm still sitting in the 70s. So it's going to be a minute before I get to any of that. But until then, I know my next one I'll be covering is some Spider-Man. So I know the Spider-Man issues have been fun, and I think the ones I'll be covering are going to be good because, well, some of them. Because I know these are going to be the death of Gwen Stacy, and that is some good issues. At least those are some better issues than what I've covered in the past. So, yeah. But anyway, that being said, thank you all for listening. If you want to check us out on social media, you can. Comic Book Rundown on all the social medias. You can email us, comicbookrundown@gmail.com. We've got merch over on TeePublic. Obviously, you're listening to this the last Saturday of this month. Next month, obviously, like I just said, going to have Spider-Man on the last Saturday. Rundown reviews every Friday. We've got Getting Franchised last Sunday of every month. Every Monday and Thursday is the new show, Kamen Rider Chronicles. Monday being Kamen Rider Zets. Thursdays being Kamen Rider Ichigo at the moment. And then just working my way through those. And yeah, so that's all we have for now. Thank you all for listening. And we will see you next time.